Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Well, we know where David May is listening to us from. That is Washington. He's a research manager, senior research analyst at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. David, a very, very good morning slash evening. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. How are you?
I am well, thank you. But still perplexed as we try and figure out what on earth is going on with regard to this MOU. I really can't call it an agreement because I just don't see which part of it is agreed. So if you can just try and help us understand specifically what is going on there, and if this is really all about the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah, no, it's definitely confusing, and I would say just especially considering how promising the war and the actions against Iran started and where this MOU has the United States right now is very disappointing. I think it's important to note the fact that the United States and Israel cooperated to take on the military threat, the nuclear threat that Iran posed, and actually achieved significant successes in that in terms of reducing Iran's Air Force, its Navy, and several other important installations. And so that part can't be undone even with an MOU. But as you were noting, some of the provisions, especially in terms of releasing as much as $300 billion to the Iranian regime and calling to halt sanctions against Iran, those are very problematic. And also the idea that with an MOU, we can trust Iran to not engage in nuclear proliferation and not to try to build a nuclear bomb is laughable. And some of these are the same critiques that were raised against the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal in 2015. Mm. And so I think that it's concerning, but I don't think that the extremely negative, pessimistic approach is correct. I think that there's probably a little more at play in terms of just the timing of when concessions will be made and allowing Iran the opportunity to agree to terms that are favorable to the United States. And if they don't go forward with that, then a resumption in kinetic action.
Just looking at it in a very objective way, it's very clear that whatever card Iran is holding is the most powerful one right now. There's little doubt, and no amount of, I think, gaslighting can convince us that this deal is a good deal and that it's a win. The question that I keep wondering is, what is that card? Because there's definitely something that Iran has that is causing this capitulation by the United States and, in fact, doing damage in many different areas of relationships, of support, etc. So what do you think? What are our options here?
So Iran's strategy, they knew that they had no chance against the U.S. military, not against the Israeli military either. And so their only real options for trying to press forward with its best possible agreement would be to what you're alluding to, closing the Strait of Hormuz to to energy trade. A large percentage of the global energy trade goes through that narrow passageway that Iran is able to shut down, not legally, but they're able to shut that down. And the other strategy that they had was to try to attack the U.S. allies within the region to put pressure on the U.S. to bring the war to a premature end. One thing I would just note is that, Iran has a very long-term view of the conflict. And for them, they don't have to deal, because they're not a democracy, they don't have to deal with election cycles. They just have to deal with surviving. President Trump, on the other hand, he has to deal with midterms and other elections. And so he's somewhat pressed in terms of his need to come to a deal sooner rather than later. But also sometimes it's possible that he wants there to be an appearance of progress toward a deal before elections, and that ultimately it won't be a full agreement until it's on American terms. At least that's the optimistic approach.
So the opening of the strait is obviously key to this. The problem is, unless that there's an alternate solution being developed, this will always be Iran's strongest weapon.
Exactly. This is nothing new. This is something that American war planners have known for decades, since the 80s. This has been a strategic choke point, something that should not have been allowed to continue, especially with a regime as dangerous as the one in Tehran. I think ultimately this will push forward for U.S. partners in the Middle East to come up with some type of solution, whether it's a pipeline that goes across the UAE and Oman or something else that will help avoid that strategic choke point. There's several other strategic choke points throughout the world that nefarious actors are able to play on, and so this is one of them. This is a very dangerous one. I would also just say that Iran, especially the regime, they don't care that much about the economic well-being of the country, so long as they're the IRGC and the various members of the leadership are able to continue to do what they need to do. They don't care that they have tanked their economy, that their GDP per capita used to be on par with Israel, but now is nowhere near that. And so for them, they can deal with this kind of this famine, this shortcoming economically, something that in the West, even just losing a few percentage points in terms of their GDP, GDP per capita, can be devastating for democratic institutions. And the voters will respond negatively if the American administration or if its partners allow for that kind of economic downturn.
Was this not anticipated, or was the thinking that Iran would be so crippled that they would not be able to block the strait?
Then that's a good question. I mean, it was definitely anticipated, but the question was, would Iran be suicidal enough to do that? Because it's, you know, not only is it a key point of commerce for the world, it's Iran's main form of reaching the global economy. So it's mutually assured destruction, and the United States thought that Iran, or possibly thought that Iran, wouldn't engage in it. The other option is that based on the war planning and the optimistic views of the war planning, the United States didn't think that it would come to that, that Iran might surrender before it came to that point where Iran could use the Strait of Hormuz to its advantage. And, you know, there's no limit to the combination of factors that could have taken the war in a different direction that weren't that didn't end up coming to fruition. But ultimately, it was definitely something that was foreseen. But perhaps maybe they just didn't appreciate exactly how suicidal of a regime the Tehran regime is.
So how does this play out?
I mean, right now in the United States, we're coming up on midterms later this year. And so at least in terms of the United States, and also within Congress, there's been efforts to push back and to have the war come to an end. And so there's a lot of pressure within the United States to get this war to come to an end. With Iran, they're very happy with how the MOU negotiations are going. I guess the only real positive that could come out is if there's a renewed effort, a renewed internal dissent that comes about, especially as Iran relaxes its restrictions on the internet and so on and so forth. But it's maybe a little unlikely given the lack of international support, or at least the delayed international support for when Iran murdered more than 30,000 of its own people in the streets. So unless something radical changes, or maybe it's again, perhaps it's a posturing and a stall tactic by President Trump, and with no intention of fully committing to an MOU that appears to be very, insufficient in terms of limiting the threat from Iran.
David May, that is where we leave it. Thank you, as always. We'll let you get to bed with the 6-hour time difference, not 7, during the summer in the US. This is obviously a little bit more challenging for you, and we really appreciate you staying up to chat to us.